Hello, welcome to the Friday, October 24th, 2014 edition of the Sands and at Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Las Vegas, Nevada. Let's start with a couple quick news items for virtual machine users. VMware did publish an advisory for VMware vSphere data protection. That is the module used for backup and recovery in VMware vSphere. Problem here is that via Java API calls, an attacker without authentication can retrieve sensitive account credentials. So pretty important to make sure you get this patch applied or at least block outside access to these Java APIs in VDP. And then also from NIST, we do have new publications for people running hypervisors, security recommendations for hypervisor deployment. That's NIST special publication 800-125A. It is a draft right now, so they're still soliciting comments. So take a look and see if they missed anything about deploying hypervisors. And you may remember a while ago we talked about how Adobe's e-reader is reporting home on every page you're reading in an ebook and how it does so over HTTP. Now, Adobe did address this problem in the digital edition for desktop ebook reader. However, it did so by, well, encrypting everything. So the data is still being sent home to Adobe, but now over HTTPS. And for Android users, if you did purchase a Samsung Galaxy S4, you probably got Knox, which is Samsung's secure workspace. It promises an isolated, secure, and encrypted workspace that you can use within your Android phone and is actually certified by the US government to be used for some classified information. Well, a reverse analysis of this software now shows that it's really more about obscurity than actual security. The PIN that you're using to set up this workspace is stored in Clear, for example, and then the encryption key used by it is really just derived from the Android ID, which is the serial number of the device, and a fixed string that is just obfuscated within the software. But now, based on this reverse analysis of the software, this string is known. As pointed out in this blog post, they would have been better off using one of the standard key derivation functions like pbkdf2 in order to generate that key. And overall, the fact that the password is stored on the device pretty much makes this product more or less useless. And Proofpoint has an interesting blog post about how CryptoWall is sort of making a little bit of comeback via paid for ads. These ads advertise anything from health insurance to flash games and, of course, show up on well-known sites because they're being added via regular advertising networks. Once a user clicks on the ad, they're then being redirected to a drive-by exploit that will attempt to install CryptoWall on the user's system. If the user is infected, they're then being asked to pay the usual ransom of about $500 in Bitcoin. Now, Proofpoint found out that the server being used to collect the ransom actually had an open server status page, so they were able to a little bit estimate how many people actually connect to it and submit payments. And according to their estimate, they will make about $25,000 a day. Now, this estimate may be a little bit high because not everybody that is connecting to the site necessarily does submit proper information. They also investigated the Bitcoin address that's being used to receive these payments and found that this address over the last 5 days did receive about $9,000 worth of Bitcoins. But of course, it's possible that other Bitcoin addresses are being used as well. Well, it is it for today. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow on a Friday evening, I will talk here at Network Security about infected devices and bots and such we have seen with the Internet of Things. Well, see if you get a chance to stop by, or otherwise talk to you again on Monday. Bye.